Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. It is Monday, October 23rd, 2017. We are here to, you know what, let's not pretend. Let's just be honest with ourselves. We're here to recap just a crappy week of games. Week 7 was a disaster. The Thursday night game was great. I think we all enjoyed that. Sunday was pretty much a fiasco, just turd after turd, up and down the lineup. Joining me to discuss that is someone who I feel like very few people on the planet do vitriolic anger about football better than Matt Alford of SB Nation. Matt, how are you?
I'm great. The resident turd expert. You've got the right guy on the line.
Tremendous. Of course, you watch all the games during a typical week. I think you are from your column, which is, I don't want to paraphrase here. Is it officially titled Football Dad?
NFL Dad. Yes, NFL, that's the name of the column.
You have the official sponsorship.
TM, you know, like yes, until we get a letter from the lawyers, it's totally official.
So I'm joined by official dad of the NFL, Matt Ufford, here. You watch all the games on Red Zone, which is what I did on Sunday as well. So instead of focusing on four games that were really not very good, I think we're just going to go through the entire docket here and just maybe if we have two comments about a game, if we have 30 seconds on a game, let's do that. If we have 5 minutes, let's do that. But I anticipate this being a very quick show because I don't have a lot to say about a lot of these awful games.
Same. Totally likewise.
Tremendous. Well, let's skip the Chiefs-Raiders game because that was actually exciting and fun. Let's begin with what I think might have been the best game of Sunday, which is still kind of strange to say, which is Bills-Bucks, which is a game that I think both teams tried to give away.
Yeah, when the Bills scored very quickly at the end of the game, about 2.5 minutes left, LeSean McCoy scored. Mm-hmm. I was like, you guys scored too quickly. It's like you've never played a game of Madden before. You gotta drain some clock, Bills. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the Bucks were going to just have an easy drive and kick a game-winning field goal. But I think it was the first play after they got the ball back. Adam Humphries coughed the ball up.
Yep.
The Bills bled some clock and then kicked a field goal. And I will say what was the most entertaining part of the game was probably the most competent failed lateral palooza I've ever seen in the NFL.
It seemed very restrained. Like it was really a gentleman's lateral as opposed to just the wild chaos that typically reigns with lateral plays.
And I guess this is a credit to the Bills special teams where they're kind of like, if you guys just want to keep on passing it backwards, that's fine. We're going to kind of stay in our lanes. We're going to make sure that you don't advance the ball forward. But feel free to keep on passing it backwards for as long as you want. But kind of between Mike Evans's size and DeSean Jackson's speed, mm-hmm. there was kind of the threat of that actually working the entire time. So, you know, for however long it went, I think a full 42 or 45 seconds. That was mildly entertaining.
It was pretty impressive.
Thumbs up.
You got to figure if you're the Bills, you're not going to let yourselves get beat by a lateral again after the Music City Miracle. I know it's an entirely different bunch of players, but I think it just has to be ingrained in your organizational culture. Just we might lose a lot of different ways, but we're not going to lose this way.
There's some sort of like pamphlet that you have to like read and sign. Say I am well aware of the Music City Miracle and I will not let any late game like lateral heavy tomfoolery best my playing squad.
I asked this on Twitter last week and I want to know what you think. If you had to pick one team that was going to be the best team in the league in terms of running that laterals play, even though of course it's going to be like a 0.5% chance of scoring a touchdown, who has the best shot, you think, with their personnel?
Oh, gosh. I guess the Chiefs.
That's what a lot of people said. I think that's fair.
I think that there's a little bit of room for homerism here because the Seahawks do have Paul Richardson and Tyler Lockett, Doug mm-hmm. Baldwin, even Jimmy Graham with some size. But I think that if we're talking about pure speed, athleticism, ability to change directions, DeAnthony Thomas and Tyreek Hill are probably going to give, and then you throw in Kareem Hunt. Yeah, probably the Chiefs.
Can I throw in a rule change proposal for you?
Oh, hit me.
So I think if you lateral successfully 10 times backwards, That should like reset the clock, and you should be allowed to throw forward one more time.
I'm right with you. In fact, Brian Grubb, the Uprox writer, formerly known as Danger Guerrero, said proposed five laterals successfully backwards, and you get a chance to throw forward again. I think that's good.
Okay.
Like, how many games will it actually affect? You know, maybe 1% tops, but the amount of joy we'd get out of that, I think it's worth doing.
Absolutely worth it. Speaking of joy and perhaps lack thereof, Bears 17, Panthers 3, in a game where Mitchell Trubisky went 4 of 7 for 107 yards, and the Bears scored two long defensive touchdowns from Eddie Jackson. Is Mitchell Trubisky the new Tim Tebow?
It was the first time since 2011 and Tim Tebow that a team completed fewer than five passes and won. And the coach of that team was Bill Barnwell.
That's John Fox.
John Fox. He is a cancer upon the NFL, and he should be fired from a cannon out of the NFL coaching circles because that guy is poison.
I did not see that
one
coming.
Bears fans are very, very vocal people,
sure.
And when the Bears are terrible and beaten down, you start to feel a little bit sorry for Bears fans. You're like, oh, well, poor Bears fans. And then they have one stupid win like that, and they're like, yeah, hey, it's the Bears are great. No, the Bears are awful, and that game should have been 3-3, generously.
Yeah, it wasn't like
and
the Panthers played well.
No. That game was awful. I can safely say, having not watched most of that game, it was really bad. The Bears went the entire second half without getting a first down.
Is that true?
I think so.
Oh, no.
I think so.
How many first? They had five first downs in the game, all game. They're 2-11 on third down. What a bunch of trash. The defense is playing well. Like, I think even they're not going to have a return touchdown or two return touchdowns every single week, but you are seeing some impressive play out of the defense, but you can't do this every week and win. You're not going to get a fake punt for a touchdown every week. So I would be skeptical of the Bears going forward. They're at New Orleans next week, and that could be an interesting shootout for the Bears. I'll just say that.
Yes.
Not interesting in terms of games. Titans 12, Browns 9. Biggest news out of this one, Joe Thomas is done for the year. Of course, it's awful, and Joe Thomas is great, and you don't want to see him get hurt, but it's also like, how much worse can the Browns really be without Joe Thomas?
Yeah, it's not like keeping the quarterbacks safe in the pocket was really the secret to the Browns' success.
Right.
Joe Thomas is like having, I don't know, a really great engine in a car that doesn't have wheels. I don't know what the right metaphor is there, but it was, it's great that he's a Hall of Famer, but when you don't have any skill in the skill positions, what's the point? So I hope that he has a nice, healthy, happy recovery. I know it takes a lot of work to get back from a torn triceps, but also, Joe, enjoy some time off, man.
Yeah.
Read some books.
Travel.
You know, travel a little bit. Get outside of Cleveland, because he clearly has no desire to leave Cleveland work-wise. So, hey, maybe now's the time to book a trip to Bali or something.
Joe Thomas, the truffle on a Taco Bell taco. Poor guy. It just seems like the Browns, there's not a plan here, which is frustrating, because even if they're going to stink, at least have a plan. But they bring back DeShone Kizer, they bench him after a half, bring in Cody Kessler, who I think has been their best quarterback all along. He was still bad in this game, but you know, they basically play for a 54-yard field goal at the end of regulation. They get it, they lose in overtime to a Tennessee team that looked bad. I mean, like, this wasn't a game where Tennessee looked great. It was a game where just the Browns seemed to drag Tennessee into the sewer with them. It does seem strange that the much ballyhooed Mike Mularkey rushing attack seems to entirely shut down altogether once Marcus Mariota is no longer mobile.
Yeah, that's as a if you were a Titans fan, I can't imagine being thrilled about winning 12-9 in overtime against the worst team in the league. Like, that's got to be as depressing a win as you can get in the NFL.
Yeah.
And still exit with your quarterback healthy.
Is it more embarrassing than losing to a good team?
Oof. Yeah, I think so, actually. Because if you lose to a really good team, but you fight really well, like, it sucks to get the L, but you're like, oh, well, hey, we were on the road against, I would say, a good team mm-hmm. in the NFL, but, like, I don't really even know if it's good. So, okay, well, we were going to play at New England. We expected to lose that one anyway. The fact that we, you know, left with a 30-28 loss, we can have our heads held high. There's lots to feel good about moving forward, blah, blah, blah. 12-9 in Cleveland, man. Ugh. I am for, by the way, one of the things that I repeatedly promote in my NFL Dad column mm-hmm. is that I want to ban regular season overtime. If two teams mm-hmm. can't figure out a winner in 60 minutes and there's no stakes, there's no, like, elimination stakes, go home with a tie. I don't want extra Titans Cleveland in a 9-9 game. We didn't deserve that. Send those suckers home with a tie and let's call it a day.
How often do you get a great game in the NFL that goes into overtime? It seems really rare.
It does. It does, because good teams the more you score, both teams score, the less likely there is to mm-hmm. be a tie. Am I right? A tied score, as you add scores, I'm sure that there's a mathematical probability I'm not taking into account here. But just, you know, we saw it last year with that Seahawks-Cardinals 6-6 game. And, you know, there was a game earlier that the Cardinals had an overtime win mm-hmm. that it was exciting at the end. Larry Fitzgerald caught a touchdown pass at the end, but the entire game up until that point was terrible. Yeah. And, like, okay, a slightly exciting ending does not justify the 3.5 hours it took to get here.
I'm just thinking, like, of that Seahawks game last year that went into overtime. That was a nightmare.
Yeah. The Cardinals Seahawks 6-6 game. It was both awful to watch, but also kind of hilarious. Like, it went so far into the anti-comedy zone mm-hmm. that it became funny again.
Yes.
But no, I wouldn't want to wish that on any NFL fan. That's just, hey, you guys couldn't figure out a winner in 60 minutes of playing time. Go home with a tie.
Yeah.
Let's not risk any more injury. You guys deserve the tie. We have advanced computers that can figure out tiebreakers. There's no reason to play extra football and risk people's lives.
I agree.
Send them home.
Send them home. That's the NFL hashtag.
Yeah.
Send them home. Saints 26, Packers 17. The Saints could not stop the run in this game. They could stop the pass, though. Brett Hundley, the early returns, I know this is shocking, not as good as Aaron Rodgers at throwing the football.
Yeah, there's some, I didn't watch a ton of this game, but from what I saw, like, Hundley has good athleticism,
yep.
but when you look at the game ceiling interception, that was a wing and a prayer. He just hucked it downfield as far as he could. And the only person that even had a chance to catch it was two New Orleans Saints. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that this is going to be a Green Bay team that is definitely going to miss the playoffs. They're just not that good unless we see a rapid improvement from Hundley or a move by the Packers to run, you know, the triple option. I don't mm-hmm. see this team getting to even 8 wins.
Do you think, if you're Matt Flynn, are you at least not warming up in your backyard right now?
Put me in, coach. I don't know. I mean, I can't help but I feel like a fool, because I thought that, you know, with Colin Kaepernick not being signed mm-hmm. by any team the entire offseason, I was like, yeah, you know, it's easy for teams to say that he's not a great fit for them. But as soon as some starting quarterback's going to go down, Colin Kaepernick's going to get the call. And it's very, very, very obvious that he is not, because what teams have been content to put on the field versus what they could get out of mm-hmm. even a the Colin Kaepernick of the 49ers last year would be a huge upgrade from so many different players.
Right.
And, you know, for Mike McCarthy to even act like he's insulted for even being asked about it. No, man, be real. Like, Colin Kaepernick is definitely good enough to be on the field for any number of teams right now.
And it's not even like they didn't see Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick scorched the entire Packers defense for 200 rushing yards in a playoff game. He beat them again the following year with a late drive to come back and beat the Packers, I believe, in Lambeau Field. I mean, like, this is not some dude they don't know about. They should know about Colin Kaepernick.
And you can't tell me that, like, oh, Brett Hundley is familiar with our system. He's had 3 years in our system. He understands it. Like, Brett Hundley is, like, super crappy Colin Kaepernick. Like, I don't understand. I do understand, and that's what makes it sad.
Yeah, that's the frustration.
I understand exactly why.
Yes, and it's not even like this is their bye week. They're probably going to mix things up a bit. They'll install more zone read because Brett Hundley did have a lot of success doing that at UCLA. They're going to use more, you would figure, Aaron Jones at running back over Ty Montgomery, who that bandwagon has vacated very quickly over the past few weeks. And, you know, that makes sense. That's a smart thing to do with your quarterback.
You could
also do that with Colin Kaepernick.
It's crazy, Bill, the way the guy that is actually a running back is better than the guy who isn't a running back.
Who could have figured that?
Yeah, wild stuff.
Speaking of wild things, actually, we didn't say anything about the Saints. Let's say something quick about the Saints. What should we say about New Orleans? Ted Ginn, 7 catches, 7 targets, 141 yards. How old will Ted Ginn get before he stops doing this?
I hate Ted Ginn so much. I'm just a simple Michael Thomas fantasy owner who wants to see the best wide receiver on the team succeed on a week-to-week basis. And Drew Brees is just a guy who's like, I see you've put faith in some other Saints in your fantasy team. Let me just go ahead and ruin your plans.
I just think, like, Ted Ginn's going to be 52 years old and he's going to have a 100-yard game and 0.1% of fantasy owners will have him in their lineup that week.
Yeah, no, it's and then, like, we were like, oh, it's the Ted Ginn time. Now I'm going to start him, and he's going to have 0 catches, or he's going to have 1 catch for 7 yards and then 2 drop touchdowns.
Yes, there's no other way. That is the tau of Ted Ginn.
Yeah.
Jaguars 27, Colts 0. I know the Browns are bad. I know the Colts beat the Browns. Is it possible the Colts are still worse than the Browns, though?
I mean, the Browns are really bad, though.
They're so bad.
I think Jacoby Brissett is a better quarterback than anybody on the Browns roster.
Oh, for sure.
And that gives them a little bit of a ceiling. But in terms of the rest of the roster, I think the Browns might have the advantage on talent top to bottom, especially with the loss of a Malik Hooker to the torn ACL, which is a shame. He was the bright spot on that defense.
Yeah. And the literal, perhaps, only bright spot on that defense so far this year. Blake Bortles in this game, 18 of 26, 330 yards and a touchdown, a QBR, I believe, greater than 95. How hard?
Colts defense.
Colts defense, indeed. How hard do you think it must have been for people to avoid tweeting that they believed in Blake Bortles all along?
Yeah, no, I think I still wouldn't trust Blake Bortles to complete 10 passes against any NFL defense on any given week. And I think if I had to bet on him, like, going up against the Colts would be the week that it happens. But I just Jacksonville is such an interesting team to watch just because A, the defense is so good.
Yeah.
And B, the floor for Blake Bortles is so low that if he just plays, like, kind of mediocre and or the Jaguars can put together a running game, they've got a very, very good shot of winning every single week. But if Blake Bortles gets in any kind of trouble, or if they just, like, if you're a Jaguars fan, third and 9 or more has to be the most terrifying down for you. I would start sweating at 2nd and 10 if I were a Jaguars fan, just because you're like, oh man, passing downs, we're so screwed. It's got to be so nerve-wracking.
You have to assume the ceiling is incomplete pass in those situations.
Yeah. And I don't know, I watched a sequence last week where in the span of two plays, Bortles didn't feel the pressure in the pocket, mm-hmm. stepped up and got sack fumbled, but the Jaguars kept the ball. And on the very next play, it was third and, I don't know, between 7 and 9, and he sailed a pass over his receiver, off the receiver's fingertips, and intercepted by a defender behind him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, in two plays, that is Blake Bortles' entire playbook. Not feeling pressure, poor decision-making, fumbling the ball, overthrowing receivers, short of the sticks, and being intercepted.
That's pretty much it.
Just like, it's like all of his problems right there.
Those are his jams. The Jags had 10 sacks and 20 knockdowns of Jacoby Brissett in this game, which makes me wonder, how many sacks do you think the Jaguars could max out at? If they played the Seahawks 100 times, and what would be the most sacks they could possibly get in one of those games?
Ooh, can we say the Giants? I feel like, sure. I feel like that Russell Wilson would like actually make things kind of interesting just because he has a little bit of escapability. Mm-hmm. If you have a lousy line plus someone who moves like Eli Manning over a 16-game season, yeah. I mean, what's to say they're not going to get 8 to 10 sacks a game?
That's average. I'm saying, what about the max? Like, could they get a 20 sack game out of Eli Manning?
No, come on.
Just think
Eli Manning would die before then.
Just think about it. Eli's never missed a game. Eli's unbreakable. Eli's going to get up. It's not going to be fast. But you could just picture Eli sadly getting up and John Gruden talking about how Eli is such a tough guy and how, you know, he's been sacked 18 times so far today, but he keeps answering the bell.
It would be like the football version of Tin Cup.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I'm going to go write that movie now. The football version of Tin Cup. Rams 33, Cardinals nothing. Another shutout. Carson Palmer's out for 8 weeks. It's plausible, possible, maybe even likely his career could be over, given that he was probably going to retire after the year with a broken arm. Real bummer. I'm also bummed for Larry Fitzgerald, who it looks like it's going to be his final year, and now he's going to spend it on a non-competitive team with Drew Stanton or Blaine Gabbert as his quarterback. Shouldn't we allow him amnesty? I mean, shouldn't he be allowed to become a free agent and sign with someone for a possible playoff run?
This is where I wish the NFL had an actual, like, strong arm, like a real commissioner that could lean on the Cardinals to be like, you need to trade Larry Fitzgerald to a competent franchise.
Yes. That's what he deserves.
Yes, absolutely. He deserves to be on a title contender.
Where would you send him if you had the opportunity to send him anywhere?
Ooh, that's really interesting. Well, I'm sure the Giants would be interested, but I think if we limit it to playoff contenders, wouldn't he be a really interesting piece on the Chiefs?
That's who I was going to say. Nice.
Oh, Bill.
Tremendous.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
All right, cool.
I think he'd be such a great fit there. You know, they could use another receiver. They lost Chris Conley to a ruptured Achilles. They have pretty much just flotsam and young players across from Tyreek Hill. It would be such a good opportunity for them, for someone who have, like, you know, to help out Travis Kelce on the intermediate routes. I just think it'd be so much fun. I'd even say Buffalo. You know what? Buffalo's a competitive team. They're not the Chiefs in terms of guaranteed playoff run, it seems like, but I would like to see Tyrod Taylor get some sort of help from a receiver.
You know what we're overlooking, though, is the obvious and sickening destination.
Oh, no.
Which would be New England.
No, you can't do that. No.
I know. I can't do it, but like, we've thought it into existence, and now he's going to go to the Patriots for a fifth-round pick.
No.
And, yeah, it's going to happen. You just think about, like, they've lost Julian Edelman before the season. Larry Fitzgerald works the slot perfectly. Oh, it makes me so sick.
This is terrible.
It makes me so sick. I would hope that Larry Fitzgerald invoked an imaginary trade, no trade clause.
Yes.
To like, listen, I want to win a ring, but not with the Patriots.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think the Rams are the best team in football, but nobody looks like they're the best team in football right now. There's no obvious contender. I mean, think about the Rams. Their two losses are a game for the Seahawks that honestly they should have won, you know, without the Todd Gurley fumbling into the pylon, the stupidest rule in football, or Cooper Kupp dropping a pass in the end zone with a couple with, on the final drive to possibly win the game. They lost a close game to Washington. I mean, is it crazy to think the Rams might be a candidate for the best team in football right now?
A candidate, sure. I'll allow you that. But I also think that the Rams have kind of the thing that have that I think has plagued the Chiefs in recent years is that and I'm not saying this, the Chiefs this year, by the way, I believe as a real title contender.
Yeah.
But in previous years, like the Chiefs have had good wins in the regular season, but when they came up against playoff worthy competition, they've shown themselves not to be up to that caliber. And I think that this is what that Rams team is that you look at their losses, the Redskins and the Seahawks, those are two teams with very good defenses, or at least Seattle's a very good defense. I think the Washington is up there as well. And I think that their offense looks great and electric, and they have good special teams, and they've got fast weapons that can get to the end zone on special teams. They've got a defensive line that creates turnovers. But when it comes down to it, second-year quarterback is a little bit unseasoned against more experienced and physical defenses. And I think that they'll probably fade a little bit as the season goes on. I think they'll make the playoffs as a wild card, and then I don't know. I think that they're a playoff team, but I don't think that they'll be a title contender throughout the season.
You have a lot of faith in the Seahawks, Matt Ufford.
I do. I'm going to say completely misplaced faith as well.
Probably warranted.
We've also, you know, the Seahawks, we're getting ahead of ourselves, have now won 3 games in a row, and they have started slowly every single season for 5 years running now. And this is a sort of team where we start every season saying, what's wrong with the Seahawks? And then in the back half of the season, we're saying, look out for the Seahawks. They're the dangerous playoff team. So
this is
it's gotten so old for me now. I just want the team. My happiest week every season is when the Seahawks are on bye. Last week, that's perfect.
Dolphins 31, Jets 28. The Dolphins are a bad football team. Let's not pretend they're a good football team, even though their record is good. They are not. Although I will say this much, I think they are better with Matt Moore at quarterback than they are with Jay Cutler. And that's the second time I've thought that now, when they replaced Matt Moore, when Matt Moore replaced Ryan Tannehill last year, I was like, I think Matt Moore might be better than Ryan Tannehill. And now I think a lot of people believe he's better than Jay Cutler. So what do they have against Matt Moore to not just let him play?
I don't know. Maybe they just don't like his face, but
I
can't see.
Not unfair.
If that's the reasoning, why is Jay Cutler the starter?
That's a good point.
No, I feel like the Jets and Dolphins was this weird reverse reaction that, like, Chicago and Carolina played an awful game. Cleveland and Tennessee played an awful game between two awful teams. And then for the Jets and Dolphins, there was some sort of, like, reverse polarity where it looked like an entertaining game. But I don't know. Like, I just didn't. They made some, like, the offenses have made some good plays, but I just don't buy the fact that, like, Josh McCown to Jermaine Kearse and Jay Cutler to Kenny Stills or Matt Moore to Kenny Stills is the apex of NFL entertainment. So I'll say this. If either team gets to 8 wins this year, they have exceeded expectations in my book.
Yeah. And also, the Dolphins don't really appear interested in retaining Jarvis Landry. I mean, they signed Kenny Stills to a big deal. They haven't. They've broken off, I think, negotiations with Landry. Last 2 weeks, he's been such a valuable player for them. He was at 7 catches for 93 yards and a touchdown on Sunday. Had a big catch to extend the game last week. I think they're taking him for granted to some extent. Like, they're gonna have a point of reckoning where they're gonna miss Jarvis Landry if they let him go.
Jarvis Landry is wildly underrated. All he does is get open and catch everything. He is very much a sort of Doug Baldwin type of player where all he does is get open despite his size and his excellent hands, runs the entire route tree. I don't know. They should pay the man,
yeah,
or let him walk to a better team.
They pay everyone. I don't understand why they're drawing the line at Jarvis Landry, where they're like, ah, this dude hasn't shown what he can do. Well, let's give Andre Branch more money. He's going to be a guy who really knows what he's doing. I'm obviously the stat nerd. I'm not the momentum guy. I will say this much. It does feel like this loss could derail the Jets this year. I mean, this was a winnable game. They were up by two scores in the second half. And now they're slate the rest of the year. Atlanta, Buffalo, at Tampa, Carolina, Kansas City, at Denver, at New Orleans, Chargers, excuse me, and at the Patriots. They might not be favored to win a single game the rest of the year.
Yeah, the wheels could come off. I know that Todd Bowles has gotten some early chatter as coach of the year for leading the Jets to several more wins than many people expected them to get. But it's an uphill slog for them. And I think maybe if you're a Jets fan, now is the time to press pause in your mind and appreciate what you have right now, because the next 2 months might be really dark.
They kind of feel like the 2016 Rams to me, where the Rams started 3-1. Jeff Fisher standing on the sidelines, really proud of himself. They lose a close game to the Lions, lose a close game to the Giants, and then after the bye, the wheels come off and they go 1-7 the rest of the way. Just admit that could be this sort of team and this sort of year for them. The wheels are going to come off the show if we don't go to a break, though. We'll be back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a second. But first, guys, this episode really is about how bad football was this week, and it was truly a dreadful week of games. And if you sat there on Sunday and watched Red Zone for 8 hours or watched a whole bunch of just ugly football, you made someone sit through the fog late at night in the second half of that Patriots game, you owe them. They deserve better from you. They deserve better from the NFL. The NFL's not going to take care of them, but you can take care of the people you care about with 1-800-Flowers.com, because for a limited time, 1-800-Flowers is giving you the option of red or assorted roses for the same amazing price of $29.99. When you order those roses, you're not just going to get a dozen roses. 1-800-Flowers will give you another dozen roses plus a vase absolutely free. You can say a vase if you want to be fancy. I'm going to say vase, but you get the idea. 1-800-Flowers will give you two dozen roses and a vase absolutely free, and that's up to 50% off the original price. You don't have to make the wrong choice, because there isn't a wrong choice. You get red roses or assorted roses. If the person you're giving these roses to is that picky about roses, you probably know what they want already, but I figure they're going to be happy with it either way. And no matter which choice you pick, these roses are gorgeous. They are picked at their peak and shipped overnight to ensure freshness. Again, one dozen red or assorted roses for $29.99 plus another dozen and a vase for free. That's an unreal deal. So if you want to do that, to order those dozen roses, whether it's red or assorted, and get the extra bouquet and vase for just $29.99, go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click the radio icon, and enter code Barnwell. That's my last name, Barnwell, 1-800-Flowers.com, code Barnwell. All right, welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, joined by Matt Offord of SB Nation. We're recapping the I was going to combine terrific and horrible. It doesn't make any sense. The awful. Awful is the word I will use. Awful slate of games from Week 7. One of the better games? And it doesn't feel right to say this, but Vikings 24, Ravens 16. Who would have thought that a game with 9 field goals would be considered one of the better games of a week?
See, I'm going to leave you hanging on a limb here, Bill, because I have this thing where, you know, how people can be colorblind and it just, they don't register the difference between, you know, red and green, I think is how it goes.
Sure.
I am Raven blind.
Really?
When they come on Red Zone, I either look to my computer, I play with my kids, I pet my dog. Like I loathe watching the Ravens offense so much that I just don't see them play.
This was a game where they were down to Griff Whalen, Chris Moore, and Michael Campanaro at wide receiver. You did not miss a very impressive offensive performance from Joe Flacco and his receiver core.
The Ravens' best offensive player is their kicker. And I know that, like, technically he's a special teams player, but this is basically a replay. They're trying to remake the same Ravens team that won a Super Bowl thanks to Matt Stover in defense. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what they're trying to do again, but with not as good of a defense.
I'm just worried that Justin Tucker is enabling the Ravens to do this, because they're like, you know what? Who needs an actual offense? We can just stall out at any point inside the opposition's 40-yard line, and Justin Tucker's going to bail us out and kick a field goal.
Yeah, inside the 45. I mean, he's automatic, seemingly, from 60. So, but then you finish the game with 16 points and only the sad touchdown at the end of the game. The Ravens are crap.
They are.
I will say, the Vikings, in the mold of teams with great defenses and highly suspect offenses, mm-hmm. I have more faith in Case Keenum, at this point this year than I ever expected to have at any point in my life.
It really seems like you'd rather have Case Keenum than Joe Flacco, right?
Yes, I'm not hesitating for a second to say that.
And Joe Flacco makes 11 times as much money.
Is that all?
It might be more. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe it's 11 times more this year. There's no worse bet in football that a team made than the bet the Ravens made on Joe Flacco after that Super Bowl. Your instincts are not wrong here. Buck Allen had 14 touches in this game for 49 yards. This offense is so depressing. I don't know. Like, I grew up on terrible Giants offenses, and I don't think I could watch this if I was a Ravens fan.
No, I feel really good about that decision, because I know, as someone who covers the NFL at large but focuses on one team, you get a lot, and I'm sure you experience this even several fold than I do, is that you're not paying enough attention to my team, or,
sure.
Oh, why do you hate my team? It's like, and it feels really good to not be an analyst and just be like, I'm going to level with you guys. I hate the Ravens. I hate watching them. It's bad football, and they suck. And that feels really good just to come out and say. And if the people of Baltimore and the great state of Maryland have a problem with that, then get a different quarterback and get some skilled players who are actually entertaining, because yeah. I can't watch that team.
They are the least exciting team in football, I think. Even the Browns, it's like, well, how can this go horribly wrong? With the Ravens, it's just, they're just so bland.
Yeah, no, like even the Giants offense is terrible in a way that is entertaining. Like I can get a sideline shot of Eli Manning and I can be full for hours. That is nourishment to me. But Joe Flacco's sad face doesn't do anything for me. It's all just mediocrity. I don't get anything out of it. No Schadenfreude even.
Cowboys 49ers 10. I watched very little of this game. I saw the same Zeke highlights. I'm assuming everyone did. Otherwise, it mostly stayed off the red zone. I don't think we needed to know that the Cowboys are a lot better than the Niners, but now we have proof.
Yeah, it was as soon as the Niners fumbled a punt early in the game and set up the Cowboys with a short field, mm-hmm. when Zeke Elliott scored his first touchdown and it was 7-0, I'm like, this one's over.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're as bad as the Niners are and your talent deficit is so great, the only way that you're going to win is with turnovers and special teams plays and getting some lucky bounces. And as soon as you fall behind, I was just like, oh, well, that's that for the Niners. See you again next week.
Were you familiar, and I was not, with Cowboys backup quarterback Cooper Rush?
Heard his name for the first time yesterday afternoon. Yeah. Never heard of him before.
Sounds like Donald Glover came up with Childish Gambino because he put his name into a Wu-Tang Clan name generator.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of seems like we put a human being into a white football player name generator and Cooper Rush came out.
Oh, Cooper Rush is really good. I have this in the NFL Dad column that is going to come out very, very shortly, soon after we record this. Mm-hmm. I have this fascination with I call them like white person word salad, where Cooper Kupp is a great example of it. Dolphins kicker Cody Parkey is a good one. And of course, the king is Blake Bortles. But in my mind, I hear Blake Bortles, and then I'm like, Bake Bortles, Bork Bortles. And it just morphs into a whole bunch of B words until eventually I circle back to Blake Bortles. I just keep on making fake names like that until I get back to the original one. It's kind of like an OCD thing.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Cooper Rush has a strange effect on people, let alone Blake Bortles. A game I did not see going the way it did, especially after the first couple drives. Chargers 21, Broncos nothing. Having been burned by the Chargers on almost a weekly basis for the past year and a half, I was 100% sure the Chargers were going to blow this game, that they were going to rue being stuffed four times from the 1 yard line early on with Melvin Gordon. They'd end up losing by a field goal, and I'd get 100 tweets about how they should have just kicked the field goal and taken the points. It didn't happen. So thank you, Joey Bosa. Thank you, Melvin Gordon, for saving my mentions. And I don't know that I believe in the Chargers, but they're not so bad.
Yeah, I think I called it today like the AFC West is just a house of mirrors.
Yeah.
Where I don't know what any team is on any given week. I feel like I've got a pretty good idea that the Chiefs are among the best teams in the NFL, and that they've lost two in a row, but most of those are fluky tight losses that happen to good teams as well as bad.
Sure.
But after the Broncos started hot this season, I thought, okay, well, this is a team with a great defense and a solid running game. And Trevor Siemian is not elite, but he is a solid game manager and exactly the sort of player that can lead a solid Broncos team to victory on the regular. And that is not what we've seen the last 2 weeks.
No.
And I don't know if the Chargers are still the horrific snake-bitten team that just has talent that gets wasted and injured every year, or if this is a new direction for the Chargers team, if they're reinvigorated by the last couple of weeks. I don't know anything happening in the AFC West.
I'm afraid to take a position because I know it'll be wrong no matter which position I take.
Yeah, I think that I was one of the people, one of my five picks this week was the Broncos, and to have them be one of three teams that was shut out this week does not give me a lot of confidence in my knowledge of what is what in the NFL.
Friend of the show, Lindsay Jones, tweeted out this, and I echo the sentiment. She cannot believe that people were actually tweeting her, requesting that the Broncos put in Brock Osweiler for Trevor Siemian.
Oof. Yeah. Oof. No, those people are sick. Those are just, she just has some perverts. Those are people who are just have weird scratches that need to be itched.
I would say those are bots, but who would invent a Brock Osweiler bot? What's the end game there?
Brock bot.
No. I don't want to imagine a world where there are Brock Osweiler bots. also from the Chargers side, is Hunter Henry the new tight end America gets behind as a breakout candidate now that Zach Ertz has actually broken out?
Or is he just the next in a long line of Chargers tight ends who will be deposed by the never-ending immortal Antonio Gates?
It does seem like 10 years from now, Philip Rivers will be throwing to Antonio Gates and Ted Ginn, and the offense will work like once a month, but it'll be so good when it works.
Yeah, I do think that he has Hunter Henry has kind of a Jason Witten-esque quality.
Oh, yes.
Where you look at him run and you're like, how does that dude ever get open? And then he's open and he makes the catch. And I don't understand. Like he's like only like maybe he's predator and can't be fully visible to defenders. I don't get it.
At what point do you think Geico transitions from Jason Witten to Hunter Henry?
Hey, Hunter, just put on this jersey with two small numbers. I've never had, there are so many examples of NFL players endorsing, you know, not NFL partner brands. And yes. So they have to wear the unbranded jersey. But I've never actually gotten mad about it until Jason Witten's.
Yeah.
Where I was just like, those, what is with those ridiculously tiny numbers?
What?
I want to know who is responsible for that.
What does that commercial have to do with car insurance?
No, that's Geico's brand. Hey, are you bored by car insurance? Well, guess what? Here's a frickin' lizard.
But even that's like, hey, buy car insurance. Jason Witten's just like working out in the dark by himself. It's such a weird commercial.
Yeah.
Speaking of working out in the dark by yourself, the Seattle Seahawks did beat the New York Giants 24-7, but it took a while to get there.
Yeah, this is, you know, I wish that I could say that this stood out in some way among the Seahawks pantheon of how they play, but like every first half they start slow. Every first half of every season they start slow. They just, you know, they had they moved the ball well the entire first half, and they had one drive end with 0 points despite having 10 plays inside the Giants 11, including four from inside the two, I believe. They came up with 0 points because Jimmy Graham dropped a pass that hit him in the stomach.
Yeah.
And then they had Thomas Rawls turnover that gave the Giants their only points of the game. And when we talk about the three teams that were shut out, had Landon Collins not snatched that fumble from Thomas Rawls and returned it 33 yards, or 30-odd yards, which was longer than I think any Giants drive of the day, the Giants would have been shut out as well.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, the Seahawks had three second-half touchdowns, and that was the result of them actually having the running game that they try to have on most weeks, and they put together a lot of long drives. The Giants were out on the field for a long time, and you saw them finally hit with some big plays. And that's the sort of game that Pete Carroll wants to have. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of game that is frustrating to watch as a Seahawks fan, because when that playbook doesn't come to fruition, it gets really ugly.
Right.
But it's a very Seahawk-y win. And as much as I can experience happiness, that was it.
Did it at least make you happy to see Doug Baldwin shove Tom Cable on the sidelines?
Yeah, that was... You know, I've gone to my Seahawks websites and I've read about the explanation for it, and you know, Baldwin as a team leader wanted it to be like on the players because they were the ones who were failing to execute with penalties and drop passes. So he wanted to make sure that Russell Wilson was finished talking before a coach tried to talk to it. And he said that he loved Tom Cable. I'm like, oh, Doug,
no,
come on. Just say that Tom Cable's got to go. It's me and near him. And that would make me so much happier, but no, apparently everything's hunky dory and Cable is, Baldwin's apologized. Cable's forgiven him. And we go back to the Seahawks offensive line sucking again next week.
If Doug Baldwin had actually punched Tom Cable, do you think a jury in Washington State, do you think you could have found 12 people in Washington State who would have convicted Doug Baldwin?
Yes, but only because there's racists everywhere. But as long as you find Seahawks fans, no way. Doug Baldwin walks.
I like that even would-be racist Seahawks fans are just like, nope, you know what? Making an exception this one time for Tom Cable.
Yeah.
That's fair. You know what? I don't think that's unwarranted. What did you think about the second Jimmy Graham drop?
That one was even worse. So the fourth and goal fade, it would be, I, to a certain extent that I am a Jimmy Graham apologist, I could see how he was expecting the ball at his shoulders or higher, because when you're a 6'7" tight end with a gigantic size advantage, you expect the ball to be put somewhere where you can get it rather than someplace where you and a cornerback can get it. Mm-hmm. So to that extent, I understood the fourth down drop. when he was running free with nothing but acreage in front of him down the left sideline, and dropped that pass, I was apoplectic. I was very, very disappointed. And that's when Mina Kimes, another friend of the show, she made a joke about taking off her cape and like, this is as far as like my defending Jimmy Graham, being a Jimmy Graham apologist, my watch has ended. And that kind of felt like the moment where I stopped apologizing for Jimmy Graham too.
Did it feel freeing?
It made me sad, but yeah, it lightened my burden a little bit.
That's good, at least. The Seahawks running game averaged 3.4 rushing yards per game, or per attempt in this game, I should say. Eli Manning averaged 3.4 passing yards per attempt in this game. Who do you trust more?
Is that bad?
It's not good.
It's funny that you say that, and I'm like, oh, the Seahawks rushing game actually looked pretty good at points. That's where I'm at with watching the Seahawks rushing attack. We're like, 3.4 yards per attempt, that's pretty good. Because they had a couple drives where, like, you know, Eddie Lacy didn't look always terrible. And Thomas Rawls, despite the fumble, had a couple of good runs.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. Like, it wasn't the out-and-out disaster that it's been week in and week out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, dude, Eli Manning with throwing to anybody except for Evan Ingram was kind of a lost cause against the Legion of Boom. And I complain about having to watch the Seahawks offense, about choosing to watch the Seahawks offense. But please, anytime I do that, just remind me that the Giants offense exists and I'll shut up.
Well, if you're watching Red Zone, you will have trouble remembering it exists because they are not going to be in the Red Zone very frequently for the remainder of the 2017 season.
Yeah.
Steelers 29, Bengals 14. This is like the most football game of the week. And it was a game where the two teams went 5-for-22 on third down. And the most notable play was a 44-yard fake punt up 12 points in the fourth quarter.
I feel like for as iffy as that game sounded when you described it as such, as far as like Red Zone went, when it clicked over to Red Zone, it was pretty entertaining because you had a back and forth affair where both teams, answered each other 7-7, 14-14, before the Steelers kind of pulled away. And that fake punt was the dagger that kind of ended any hopes for the Bengals. But, you know, we got to see Antonio Brown score a touchdown. We got to see a fun hide-and-seek celebration from Juju Schuster-Smith. The Bengals got that game-tying touchdown on fourth down on a great pass to Tyler Kroft. So, like, that was a pretty entertaining game from a red zone perspective. And as a connoisseur of stiff arms, you know, Le'Veon Bell buried Dre Kirkpatrick sometime in the third quarter, I think. And so for me, it kind of checked the boxes of being entertaining from a little snippet perspective, which is really all I'm looking for as an ADD Red Zone fan.
Has any bandwagon in recent memory emptied out quicker than the Martavis Bryant bandwagon?
Yeah, things are not looking great for him, huh? And people are piling on the Juju Schuster-Smith bandwagon instead. Now, we talked about trading Larry Fitzgerald. Is there any sort of real possibility that Martavis Bryant would be traded midseason?
It'd be easier because his cap figure is low. So, I mean, it's totally possible he can get traded. It's just, who's going to really offer the Steelers a lot for Martavis Bryant in this situation where he's basically like going on Instagram and taking shots at his teammates and demanding a trade and then denying it the next day?
I was hacked.
Yeah, multiple times. I didn't change my password after the first time I was hacked.
I keep getting hacked every time I get drunk and say bad things about the team.
Yeah, my password is trade me to the Eagles, and I forget to change it. My bad. It's a mess.
And kind of a waste, too, because that's such a loaded offense that, I don't know, Where is the failure there? Is it a failure of organizational culture? Is it a failure of coaching? Or is he just an irredeemable jerk? I don't know. I would hope that, you know, as a talented guy, he finds a spot where he can shine. But I don't know. I think that if I were a talented cog in the Steelers offense, I would want to catch deep balls from Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah. It just seems like that's going to be the best thing for him in the long run. And it doesn't seem like that's the case. You know, if it were players constantly coming up through this scheme and this system and this coaching staff and having trouble, you would blame the culture, but it does seem like he is the exception to the rule. So I think it's him. You know, again, I could be wrong. I don't know the full story. I don't think anyone knows the full story at this point, but it does seem like he's the guy with the problem there as opposed to the rest of the team around him. Let's finish up. Patriots, Falcons, the Super Bowl rematch played in like a thick chop, a thick fog for most of the contest. And after this week, it kind of felt like that was pretty warranted. It felt like it was a totally reasonable summation of the week that we saw.
It was strange to watch that game because the Falcons looked both totally comfortable on offense running the ball, mm-hmm. but also totally unlikely to score at any point.
Yes.
And it was like, if you hold the New England Patriots to 23 points, you've got a pretty good shot of winning that game because their defense is really bad. And the fact that you have the weapons that the Falcons have and they can only score one touchdown, I think it's time to go ahead and turn on, hit the sirens in Atlanta, because that's a team that is just not living up to its potential.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people blame this on Steve Sarkisian, and sure, I don't think he's as good as Kyle Shanahan. There was going to be an adjustment period after losing Shanahan this offseason, but I went back and watched that game a little more closely for my column today, and Matt Ryan left three touchdown passes on the field in the red zone. I mean, he had multiple receivers who maybe not like wide open, not like the Jimmy Graham drop, but passes that he makes last year. You know, even if he doesn't make all three of them, he makes two of them. At the very least, he makes one of them. And they didn't score a point on any of those drives. They went 0 for 3. It was two drives that ended with missed field goals, one blocked, one missed by Matt Bryant, who's hurt, and then the third down pass to an open Julio Jones that was thrown behind him, leading to the fourth down jet sweep that went nowhere and was stuffed for a loss. That, again, that the jet sweep is probably too cute, but they had two blockers on two defenders on the outside, and just the blockers did not execute the play.
We've seen the Titans scored on a jet sweep to Delanie Walker earlier this season. Mm-hmm. Earlier in the day, the Seahawks ran a jet sweep at the goal line, and it didn't work, but that was, again, more of a blocking situation. I don't think it's necessarily a bad play call, and it's natural to want – I think it's natural when you have the talented running backs and also the best center in the game, mm-hmm. to maybe go ahead and trust your team to get some push up front and just go straight ahead instead of going from sideline to sideline. But in a vacuum, I think the call was ridiculed more for its results than for its process.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Music to my ears. You know what, what you need to say to get me.
I speak your language, Bill.
I appreciate that, buddy. It did seem like the Falcons also just didn't get a pass rush in this game. They got a couple sacks early around the edge, but there were so many plays in this game, and this was the big difference between the Super Bowl and last night's game for me, is that in the Super Bowl, they got so much pressure up the middle. There were so many times where you had Grady Jarrett coming up the middle for sacks. They had linebackers blitzing in for sacks in the Super Bowl. And this game, time after time, you know, Vic Beasley would get around the edge. Adrian Claiborne would get around the edge, and Tom Brady would just have a comfortable pocket to climb into. We climb up to the top of the pocket, find an open receiver, easy completion. And that happened maybe a dozen times in this game. It was kind of crazy to see the Falcons not adjust and try and do something to create more pressure on the interior.
Yeah. Just a disappointing game for the Falcons. I think that they moved the ball fairly well. And the fact that the final result looks like a blowout is, I don't want to say unfair because it's not like they played well, but I think that with just a little bit better execution, that looks that's a lot more entertaining game, mm-hmm. and it's also a lot closer too. The other side of the coin that we're not talking about is the Patriots defense. And do they deserve now a modicum of respect for shutting down the Falcons offense? Or is this more a case of the Falcons offense is stuck in neutral and this is the Patriots defense will go back to being historically bad next week?
Falcons beat themselves. I really believe that. I don't think the Patriots did a lot on defense to make that happen. I don't think they would have let the Falcons march 80 yards down the field every single drive before they decided to suddenly turn into the 85 Bears in the red zone. And, you know, I've heard the argument that, okay, well, they figured things out in that Bucs game in week five. And then since then, they've led 14 points, 17 points, 7 points. But yeah, they are playing better. They're not allowing those enormous, like, 50-yard gains on blown coverages anymore. But You can't ignore the fact that they allowed Josh McCown to throw for 335 yards or whatever in a tight game with no garbage time yardage against them last week. Like, that happened. You don't get to write that game off as like, oh, well, it doesn't count because we won. Like, that happened, my dude. Like, your defense was bad last week. And I think it was really about Ryan executing poorly this week as opposed to the Patriots making plays. So I do think that the Patriots defense is not that improved. They've been very lucky and very fortuitous in the red zone. Opposing kickers are 1 of 6 against them in the last 3 weeks. So Matt Bryant missed 2. Nick Folk went 0-for-3 in that Bucs game. So I don't buy the defense yet. Although I will say, I don't like the Falcons are not only mediocre, but they're 3-3. They beat the Bears in week one on a game where the Bears dropped a touchdown pass in the end zone that would have won them the game in the final couple minutes. They nearly lost to the Lions. If Golden Tate stretches a half yard further on that play at the half yard line, they would have lost the Lions. They could be 1-5 right now, and no one would bat an eye in terms of them being unlucky.
Very, very, very thin results.
The cops have come to arrest you for your...
Yes. my takes have been so hot that the police are just moments away from banging down my door.
Well, we should probably finish up then before the cops come get you so you can escape.
Yeah, indeed. The Patriots, by the way, 2 of their next 3 games are against the Chargers and Raiders. Now, those games are at home, but the Patriots aren't particularly great at home. So we'll see if that defense is for real or just a pretender.
Let me ask you, how frequently would the fog have to come back before you assume that Bill Belichick was actually controlling the weather?
If it happened even once over the next 2 home games, I would start wondering if he had made a second pact with Lucifer.
He remortgaged.
He got the second mortgage on his soul.
You know what? Good for him. That's a great negotiation tactic. If he can bulk. Matt Alford, before you get hunted down by the police, thank you for coming on. Where can people check out more of what you are doing at SB Nation and just in general with your life?
Okay. So you can find me on Twitter at Matt Ufford. And from there, you will find my weekly column called NFL Dad on SB Nation. You can find my YouTube show every other week on SB Nation's YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/SB Nation. Subscribe. And I have a supposedly weekly podcast called The Inactives with Nick Stevens, who is a Patriots fan and is a good time as often as we can make it happen.
Matt, thank you so much. I'll be back.
Thanks
on
so
again.
Much, Bill. I always have a great time talking to you.
That sounded like you didn't actually mean it, though.
I sound sarcastic by nature, but I really did mean that.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you to say. But was I being sarcastic when I said that? We can go back and forth for hours, but we're not going to. We have to go. But thank you so much, Matt.
All right. See you, Bill.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. Hopefully we get some better football games to talk about next week. But thanks so much to Matt Alford for being game and coming on and just talking about some loathful football this week. More coming later this week. We're going to preview week 8 later on. Of course, I'll be on the Nickel Package on Wednesday. I think talking about the Seahawks, maybe some teams who are likely to tank in that performance. But more preview stuff coming later on this week. More football, more audio, hopefully some better games. But thanks so much for listening and supporting the show and checking it out. And more coming later this week.